You're listening to the Bethel University Chapel Podcast, recorded from the Everest Rohr Chapel Fine Arts Center in Mishawaka, Indiana. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. My name's Susan, and I'm just chuckling at how grand that makes me sound. And I got to move back a little bit because I might actually fall into that pit. I lack bodily awareness. I don't know if any of you guys, I've had friends tell me that before. I sort of lack a spatial, like, where I'm at. So I'm one of those people that could fall off the edge of the Grand Canyon. Do you know that, like, over 10 people a year die falling into the Grand Canyon? But that is not the story I'm here to tell you this morning. Stories. Do you guys love stories? You guys just got to. How many of you guys went to see Beauty and the Beast? Yeah. You had an incredible story unfold here on this stage. And Sean, the Sean that we know and love, all of you guys, invited me here to share a little bit of my story with you. Specifically, how I've come to have a passion to see the church become a better lover of the LGBTQ population. And I always chuckle when I say that out loud, because to myself, I do not feel like a likely candidate. Like, if God were scanning the crowd, I don't know why. I think, wow, that's so interesting. You picked me. So, but that story, and really the rest of my story and all of your stories, are nestled inside a much grander story of how God is reconciling the world to himself. And so my story just sort of stands inside that story. And I became a follower of Jesus when I graduated from high school. Someone graciously shared the good news with me. I did not grow up going to church. My parents weren't believers. But I became a follower of Jesus. I headed off to what you've probably never heard of, Akron University, even though it's the second largest public school in Ohio. One Akron fan. Can't get off. I contend to trail off into, like, random stories, but we're not going to do that this morning, because you guys want to get out and go to your next things in a timely manner. But I grew a lot in college. I got involved with a group called Campus Crusade, or CRU. I grew a ton in my faith. I just loved Jesus, loved people. Graduated, got married. I followed, like, the plan of that we can hear through church culture. I graduated, I got married, I had a couple kids. I went to church, I got in a small group, and I helped lead the youth group. And so, in a nutshell, that was, like, the whole first 35 years of my life. But leading the youth group was really cool, and it is actually what introduced us to camp over here at South Bend, over here in South Bend. But over a series of months, probably in my early 30s, 20 years ago now, a little more than 20 years ago, my husband and myself were just having some unsettling times. We were reading some missionary biographies and just wondering to ourselves, what does it look like to follow God into some suffering, into hardship? We kept reading that suffering was normative in the Christian life, and our life just felt so easy. So we just started to pray and pray, and we prayed. We prayed a lot and became convinced that we weren't going to live probably much longer, even in the, we lived in, like, a pretty small upper middle class white suburb in Ohio. Our youth group had gotten involved with Camp Rayburd, coming over and being volunteers here in the summer. So I'd come to camp for about 12 years already, and God had really grown my love for the ministry. And to make a really long story short, God called my husband and myself to move here to South Bend. Our income got cut in about a third to come, and we lived in a little two-room cabin with our two kids for the first 18 months that we were here. And it was just an incredible experience following God someplace where we didn't know what the end was going to look like. And so God has invited us all into a story. His story is, like, centuries and centuries old. It's epic. But he invites each one of us to walk alongside him. And he teaches and trains us then how to walk alongside other people. And I don't know if you've ever walked alongside someone that is tall, significantly taller or significantly shorter than you. My associate pastor at church right now is 6'8". So he is considerably taller than me. So anytime, and he'll often suggest, let's go for a walk. And I think, why? Like, it's painful for you. And then I'm just like trying to stroll really quickly. But trying to like move and keep pace with someone can be challenging. But Jesus, I think, adjusts his step in order to walk alongside me, in order to walk alongside you. And even though it can be frustrating to adjust our step to walk alongside someone, especially I have a little friend who's 5, and she's pretty slow when we're walking. And so I try to make sure we're not walking any great distances, but she likes to walk. And so I gotta adjust my step a lot. It can be frustrating, but that's what the Lord has done for us. So I specifically walk alongside people wrestling with gender or sexual identity and helping them see how that unique struggle fits into God's larger story for their lives. This has brought me so many interesting friends over the years, and it has moved me to like a lot of self-reflection, a lot of introspection about the church and why the church is the way it is. And it's been very humbling, but it was not always the case with me. When I moved to camp, I moved to camp when I was 35, I would have said at that time, I do not know even one gay person. Nobody in my sphere would describe themselves in the LGBTQ realm, which I now believe that probably was not true, but my eyes were not open to notice that. And we're gonna like take a little diversion into another story just quickly, but are you familiar with the story of Mary and Martha? Mary and Martha, they're in the Bible. They and their brother Lazarus start to follow Jesus. They get to be really good friends with him. And I just love the story of Mary and Martha because I always want to see myself like Mary. And she's sitting at the feet of Jesus, just listening, taking it all in. And there's Martha. Martha's just working, toiling, getting frustrated. Over the years, I've come to see that by nature, I'm so much more like Martha. I am a worker. As much as I'm a people person, I'm also very task-oriented. And I have almost a boundless amount of energy. My husband is waiting for me to get older. Like, when are you going to? I have a lot of energy. So I like to work, and I'm a lot like Martha. And I imagine that when Martha kicked it into gear, and she's trying to get dinner ready and get all this stuff done, and man, he's the Messiah, like, we got to make things good. She's probably frustrating for everybody, and it's very hard to keep up with her. And then she gets so frustrated that she pulls Jesus to the side to take him to task a little bit. Like, come on. Like, I know we're all here for you, but I'm cooking dinner. And there's Mary just sitting, doing nothing. And so Jesus immediately, I love how Jesus doesn't say, hey, Martha, can we talk about this later? Or anything that he could have said, hey, Martha, I'm the Messiah, step back. But he just pulls up alongside of her and says, Martha, Martha, Mary has chosen the better thing. And just takes time with her, slows his step down to walk alongside of her. And this happened to me about 14 years ago, where I felt like Jesus had some things he wanted to teach me, and there was like an abrupt stop, and he just sort of slowed down to walk alongside me. I'd been working at camp probably 6 or 7 years, and if you don't know much about Camp Rayburd, it's like a little hidden gem out on the west side on Bass Lake. Camp is 103 years old, which is pretty long here in South Bend. So we're 103 years old, always doing the exact same thing, sharing the good news with low-income kids and teens. From South Bend, like 95% of our kids come from South Bend, Mishawaka area, and about that same percentage pay our lowest fee, $35. So camp, that's what drew me there. Camp was an amazing place that is not widely known in the greater South Bend community, which is some of our problem, that getting that word out there. But, so I'd been at camp, and I'd been working there for about 7 years, and I was in charge of all of the activities that happened at camp. And that summer, our first camper came out to us, came out as wrestling with same-sex attraction. And I remember sitting with, there were only 3 of us on staff It was myself, my husband, and a really good friend of ours named Mike. We're on the full-time staff year-round. And we sat because we didn't really know how to respond. I mean, there's that in-the-moment response where I know, like, she's talking to me, and I want to respond, like, in a really loving, welcoming way. But past those first, like, 15 minutes, I just didn't know where to go. And none of us did. And it's kind of funny, like, when you work at a camp, and you weren't a camp person. I'd never attended summer camp growing up. And my husband's a mechanical engineer. I'm a nurse by trade. And our executive director, Mike, was a chemist. So we all came to camp, and none of us knew anything about camping. And so our usual routine was, if something came up, we didn't know about it, someone would get sent to, like, research, report back. So I'm really not joking. Here's the stage. So this young gal has come out. We are praying about what to do. And my director, Mike, lifts his head and he says, well, she's a gal, so you go learn about what it means to be gay. Report back to us. And I was like, no. I don't know what to do. Like, how do you do that? Like, how do you do that? And it was so far out of my comfort zone. But anyways, obviously I got over that. That was where I really felt like the Lord slowed down to walk alongside me, because I had sat at Wendy's with this gal, and we had talked for hours, and I'd known her for a long time. Being a camper, our campers start to come at 8 years old, so a lot of times we get to see them grow up. And I wanted to be able to have something to say to her. And I knew, like, at that point, like, I'm like in my early 40s, I knew the church answers to things. But that just didn't really seem like what I wanted to say right at that point. So I wanted to do a little learning. I wanted to be able to walk alongside her. And I prayed and asked the Lord to help me learn. And that may be I don't know if I'll ever pray a more interesting prayer than sitting at my house, praying out into the window, saying, Lord, I just want to learn. Anything you bring along, I'm in. And over the next couple years, life was pretty wild. The Lord brought along people and circumstances, and too wild to be normal. You know, when something comes in your life and you think, oh, that must be the Lord. I couldn't have dreamed that up. But just tons of experiences where I was the sexual minority in a room, sitting, listening to people's stories, learning language, learning culture, learning my Bible. I came to be a really firm believer that I was raised up in church from like 18 when I got saved to repeat a sexual ethic that I did not understand. And I don't know how many of you guys feel like that. Like, if we sat down for coffee and I said, explain to me why God set up marriage the way that he did, why it's between a man and a woman, like, could you really thoughtfully explain that to me? And that's a problem in our churches. But I beat down a lot of fear of being in places that were uncomfortable. And being a Christian in a predominantly LGBTQ space was very uncomfortable. I guess I'll use that word. The church, and whether you, well, this is my opinion. You could agree with me or not agree with me. I think that over history, especially in the last 50 or 60 years, the church has often not been very kind to LGBTQ people. And so that just gives you a reputation. You're a Christian and you're just sort of lumped in with people that aren't perceived of as being kind. And I also came to reckon with, as I studied the scriptures and spent time with people, came to reckon with my own sexual brokenness, that there were ways that I fell short of God's ideal for sexuality, for created sexuality, and that none of us walked out of the garden or walked into our lives whole in the area of sexuality or whole in any other area. And I don't know if you've spent some time thinking about that, but we really are, in every respect, on a level playing field with anybody around us. except for the grace of God, there is no amount of untold sin and pits that I could fall into. So I got to know people. I came to understand some things about myself. I just was kind of undone by the whole process. And I felt the Lord one day, and I am not from a background where I would say that, like, yeah, I got this word from the Lord. But I got this word from the Lord that pretty clearly said to me, I want to use you to change some things. And I was thinking, me? Like, I'm Susan. I work out at Camp Rayburn. And I have struggled throughout the whole history of my life with a lot of insecurity. And so really just thought, like, is there nobody better? Like, you couldn't find anybody else? And what does this even look like? So I mostly put that to the side. But I'd already developed over the last few years, just like the Lord would bring something up, and then I would just say, yes, this seems like this is the Lord. So that's really how what's landed me here. But in at that moment, as I'm doing all this learning, I work with these other two people. We were all like in community doing some learning together, and we began to do some repenting of just things that like preconceived ideas that we had had and notions that we had had about the LGBTQ community. And we came to believe that the first place we could start change was with ourselves. But then we, every year, we host 40 summer staff that spend the entire summer with us, and 800 campers come. And that we could begin by having a summer staff that was equipped and ready to welcome campers with just kind of God's radical, outrageous love, but specifically in the areas of gender and sexuality. That we could have staff that were biblically literate and able to speak to people, specifically speak to campers, that would come in ways that would be faithful to what we believe the Bible said about these things, but that would also be winsome and inviting and not immediately like talk to the hand. And how do you do that? But that is what we set out to do. And the Lord really, because he's God and he's bigger than I am, this was all in a cultural landscape that had not yet really started the conversation. So I know you guys are thinking, what was that? Because that would have been when you were like 10 years old. In the last 10 years, the conversation related to LGBTQ things in our country has exploded. And it's starting to bubble up in the church. The church is starting to talk more and more. But really, 10 years ago, there was very few people talking about it and very few books to read about it. But you guys are probably recognized here at Bethel, you live in community, and community changes you. For good or for bad. Like, you live with people, and maybe at this point in the year, they annoy you. They don't put their dishes in the sink, there are things. But you're forced to change because you're not living in isolation. And the same thing happens at camp. Like, staff live, the younger, we have some high school age staff, and we have some college age counselors. And you're living together for 9 weeks. And the atmosphere is ripe to get on each other's nerves and all the things that happen when you live together in a room. But it's also very transforming. And we believe that with our intentionality around how we want to see conversations happen at camp and how we want to teach our staff to love well, that with that intentionality, we create sort of an incubator for just incredible growing in people. And then as we welcome campers, that same staff is able to create an atmosphere in their cabins that's welcoming and safe for people to share, and share not just about like biblical things related to gender and sexuality, but our big purpose at camp is to share the good news of the gospel. And so even though like in this time when I'm talking today, the things that we've changed at camp gets a lot of press, in a sense. But really, camp has been about the same thing, sharing the good news all these years. But we want campers to be able to hear what we're saying And if they don't perceive that I'm safe and that I'm loving, there's immediately a switch that turns off for them, or that I'm able to relate to them. So we want to help staff take a step back and understand, like, why did God design marriage? How did he design marriage? Sexuality and gender are core to us. And really, in today's, like, the culture we're all in today, holding to a historical biblical sexual ethic is just kind of scoffed at. And so, because it's scoffed at, I think we see droves of people in the church finding it easier to embrace a more affirming ethic instead of, I believe, really digging in. And I don't want to, I believe I have faithful brothers and sisters who believe that I read the scriptures wrongly and that God is okay with gay marriage. I believe that I have faithful brothers and sisters that believe that. I believe they're wrong. And so you guys are going to decide in your mind, you're going to decide. I'd encourage you to not do it willy-nilly based on anecdotal evidence from a friend who's struggling, but really dig yourselves into the Bible and believe what you believe. Know why you believe what you believe. I love in Paul's letter, I think it's to Timothy, toward the end he's given Timothy all these things, like, hold on to this, hold on to this, hold on to this. And then he says to him, because this brings the life that is really life. And that all of us are walking along in a story that we believe is our life. But God has this big story that he wants us to buy into, because that is the life that is really life. And so when I'm talking to a camper or to a staff member, we've had hosts of staff members wrestling with gender dysphoria or same-sex attraction. When I'm sitting and talking to them, one, I know that they are an image bearer, but that a lot of times I want to be able to articulate in really relatable ways that God's design for our sexuality, even though I may not completely understand why he set it up the way he did, he said that sex is saved for inside a male-female marriage. And he said that following that path, whatever it looks like in our lives individually, following that leads to the life that's really life. And I want to be following the life. I want to be in the life that's really life. I don't want to be following something that I think is not leading to life. And I certainly do not want to lead anybody there. If you read any of the passages about, like, trouble for leaders, I want to be leading well. I also want to help people understand that their unique maleness and femaleness, the way that we bear God's image, the imago Dei in each one of us, is unique because we're male and female. That if you read in Genesis, it's very linked in the same sentence that God creates us male and female in his image. I am a female image bearer. And I could not even really begin to explain exactly all that I think that means. But I also we don't have time to get into unhelpful stereotypes that the church and culture has told us what it means to be male or female. But while you're reading the Bible and coming to your conclusions about your sexual and gender ethic, look up what the Bible specifically says about maleness and femaleness. It's not a lot that's there. Not to say that I think that God doesn't have ideas about maleness and femaleness. It's just not, I think, the clothes that we wear, or the length of my hair, or if I'm a guy and, like, I like to fish. That I don't think it has to do with those things. But we don't really have time to take to launch into those things. But I cannot take someone, I cannot walk alongside someone where I've not gone. And you can't either. And I know, like you, as friends, like, you group together, and my friends were the same ways, and I want to go talk to a friend about whatever struggle it is that I'm having. But if they haven't walked through that and seen the Lord walk them through that, there's only limited things that they have to offer me. And it's the same with us. So it's been cool to me to see the Lord use me. So as I just picture, I'm a very visual person. I picture myself just walking alongside Jesus. Sometimes we're holding hands. But then I also have people that I'm walking alongside. And I can't faithfully walk with them if I'm not walking with him. But I also want to ensure that as I'm walking this out, I'm encouraging the people around me to walk it out. And I want camp, specifically because I'm there all year long, to be a safe place for people to wrestle with these things. I want Bethel to be a safe place. I want churches in our area to be a safe place to walk these things out. Because if our spaces are not safe for people to disclose areas that they have genuine struggle in, then it can't transform. I need to be able to be like everything, the huge mess that I'm feeling inside, and have someone walk alongside that with me to really be changed. If I got this one little piece of me that's just hidden, that I'm not going to tell anybody about and I'm afraid because there's so much shame in my life, then God can't transform me in that area. So, and it's the same whether you're at camp, whether you're here at Bethel, whether you're at home over the summer in your relationships. I don't think my story is unique or especially praiseworthy. I think that God opened the door. I think that God opens a lot of doors to us, and that sometimes I don't see that he's opened this door. But I saw that he opened the door, and ever since, from very early on in my Christian walk, I had a mentor who always told me, she said, someday if you have kids, you'll tell your kids to listen and obey quickly. And so that has always stayed in my mind. I've always prayed to be a quick obeyer. And so I felt like that helped me. God opened this door and I was a quick obeyer in it. But he wants us all to walk in step with him and see his heart for people. And I know it gets tiring as you get toward the spring semester. And you've probably maybe heard bunches of people stand up on stage and talk about God's heart for people. But it's incredible. It's incredible. He has this huge, generous heart that moves toward people. He wants to see us brought into relationship with him, and we're all broken. There's nothing in us that should draw him to us, but he loves us. And I just think it's so cool to get to tell other people that. So if we keep in step with him, we can lead others to him. Often I pray, let me love people like you love people. You read through the Bible, it's amazing. People, obvious sinners of the day, prostitutes, bad people, tax collectors, are all seeking Jesus out, all wanting to be close to him. And I think about that, like when I think about our churches today. This is probably 10 years ago, but Barna did a research study and just asked, like, I don't know how many people they survey, bunches of people. And the number one adjective that came up for the evangelical church was anti-homosexual. And really, that should break our hearts. Like, we should be for an outrageous love, for people, for biblical literacy. But we should be for people. So I'm praying in the coming years that, and I still have a few good years left in life, and I still have a lot of energy. I want to see the church change to be a space that loves people better. I pray for this at camp. I pray for my church. I pray for Bethel, churches in our area, and I pray for other camps. I don't know how many of you guys went to summer camp. Maybe some of you guys went to prairie camp. But camp is a huge gathering ground for people, kids, in the summer. So it's an awesome place for kids to experience Jesus loving all of them, even the hard parts of their story. And I don't know how many of you have had friends or people that have shared with you, but experiencing attraction to the same sex or gender dysphoria where you feel just so out of place in your skin is just really hard. It's just really hard. It's really hard. And it should give us compassion for people. So really, I guess my question for you is, where are you at in walking alongside the people faithfully that God has put on your side, put around you? If we can hop back a second to the story of Mary and Martha, you meet them way later. You guys sang about Lazarus coming out of the tomb this morning. We see Mary and Martha again at Lazarus's tomb. And if you remember the story, Lazarus got sick. They messaged to Jesus, hey, Jesus, Lazarus is sick. They know that he loves them. And Jesus just chills a couple more days and waits basically for Lazarus to die. And we get to see the end of the story. But at that moment when they're waiting for Jesus, Mary and Martha do not get to see what's going to happen in the story. And I love the picture of Martha. Of course, she's beating Mary to get to Jesus because Martha is just a mover. And she's running to Jesus, but she comes just with such a heartfelt question. Like, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother, he wouldn't have died. And again, Jesus just stops and he talks to her and says, Martha, do you believe that I'm the life? Do you believe that I have the life that is really life? And you guys know the end of the story. Well, maybe you don't, and you should read it in Luke or most of the other Gospels. I think it's in at least a couple Gospels. Sorry about that, not knowing exactly. But Lazarus rises from the grave. Hate to be the spoiler alert, but Lazarus rises from the dead. So amazing, like if you're his sister. So I'm sure that in the moment, Mary and Martha, none of them, completely understood what was going on for them in that moment. And a lot of times I don't. And I think if we're honest, a lot of times most of us don't completely understand the bigger picture of how we're fitting our life into God's bigger story. But what about you? You're writing your story here. And you have like moved out of your house, you're living here at Bethel, or you're driving back and forth to Bethel, and you are writing your story inside the larger story that God is writing. He wants to use all of us to bring people into relationship with himself and to point out to people there is a big story. There's a big love story out there where God is drawing people to himself. You are the future of the church that I keep saying has kind of a bad reputation. So what are you gonna do to change that? How are you gonna be people that walk alongside people? How are you gonna have good doctrine but outrageous love and hospitality that just throws people off guard? Sorry, I've spit on your stage. I can't tell you how many people I've met over the years who a few minutes into the conversation will say, and you said that you're a Christian? I want to surprise people with loving them really well. I want to surprise them. So my question, as you walk out of here, do you have Jesus in the one hand and somebody else in the other hand? Are you faithfully leading people into the bigger story around you? And where are you at in that? And if any of you feel like a stirring, like, oh, I'd like to talk about this more, you can hit me up. I would totally have coffee with you. I put some cards and some information about camp. We're still hiring counselors down there and at the door. And Sean has my contact information. But I would love to talk. But I want to encourage you to live inside the bigger story. And I think, Sean, you were supposed to come up when you heard your name, right?
Yeah, I did. I heard my name.
Thanks for listening to the Bethel University Chapel podcast. Subscribe to the podcast and get more information at chapel.betheluniversity.edu or check us out on the iTunes store by searching for Bethel University Chapel.